Greetings to my listeners all around the world. Welcome to Safe Dividend Investing's podcast number 120 on June 15th of 2023. My name is Ian Duncan MacDonald. In today's podcast, I'll be answering seven interesting investment questions. But before I begin, I'd like to remind listeners that the purpose of my podcasts and my books is to show those with patience and common sense that they are capable of successfully managing their own investment portfolios. They just need to be shown how easily and safely it can be. Achieving lifetime financial independence as a self-directed investor is possible, and my objective is to show you how. Question number one. Should dividend income be reinvested in the same stock the dividend came from, or should it be invested in a higher yielding stock? I do not know how many stocks you have in your portfolio, what their scores are, or what their dividend yields are. As you know, I like to have 20 to 30 stocks in my portfolio because any more than that just requires too much time to manage. When something becomes a burden, people start cutting corners. Instead of rescoring the stocks in their portfolio on a regular, systematic basis, they find excuses not to score them until the share price has dropped below where they bought them, or dividends stop being paid. While the stocks they initially chose were strong, you cannot take their continued strength for granted. Even though there are 16,200 stocks available to buy on North American stock exchanges, you want to choose the best 20 to 30 stocks. There are a limited number of financially strong companies with histories of paying high dividends whose dividend payments go back 10 years or more. I avoid concentrating on each stock in my portfolio individually. I concentrate on the ups and downs of the total portfolio, not the individual pieces. When the portfolio spins off dividend income, I invest that income within the 20 to 30 existing stocks that I invested time and effort in selecting. The money may or may not be applied to the stocks that generated the dividend payout. I do not go looking for more stocks because I have already identified the best 20 or 30. I will often try to use the new dividend money to balance the differences between the existing high dividend, low scoring stocks with the lower dividend, higher scoring stocks. On request, I send out to my podcast listeners and my ebook readers an Excel spreadsheet that helps to do this balancing. Chapter 5 in my last book, New York Stock Exchange's 106 Best High Dividend Stocks, was devoted to balancing high and lower dividend stocks. You do need capital gain with your dividend income to keep growing that portfolio so that your dividend payouts stay ahead of inflation. A $100,000 portfolio with an average dividend yield of 6% is paying out $6,000 each year. 4 years from now, when those stock prices have increased, the value of the portfolio may have risen to $150,000. You're still getting the same average dividend yield of 6%, but now $9,000 is being paid out to you each year. This 50% dividend payout gain will keep your income ahead of inflation. I found most years that the value of my portfolio increases by about 12%. While the objective is to always strengthen your existing portfolio as well as you can, a higher dividend yielding stock may seem attractive, it is not necessarily a better stock. What is the stock's share price and dividend payout history? What is its score? I live on most of the dividend income that goes into my bank checking account. Well, it has a significant cash float to cover any unexpected expenses. I do invest surplus money from it back into my portfolio stocks when it reaches a certain level. Question number two. Is using margin to increase purchasing power a good way to build my high dividend portfolio? When I hear terms like using margin to increase purchasing power, it sounds like I am dealing with a speculator who likes the thrill of taking chances to become rich. When you buy on margin, your portfolio is the security for the financial institution that is granting you a margin loan. Yes, it is a loan. If a marketing crash comes along and your portfolio's value drops significantly, the lender will want to lower their loan's risk exposure. You gave them the right to sell your stocks to cover whatever loan risk they perceive. Be assured you will go through at least one market crash before you retire. While the crash will have minimal impact on your dividend income, it can drop the value of your shares by 50%. A big drop is usually when the new investors panic. They have never been through a crash before. Instead of waiting for the stock prices to recover, they sell out at a loss. This is the worst possible time to sell stocks. If they had scored the stocks before selling out, they would see that their carefully chosen strong shares are just as strong as ever. If they had checked the history of the stock's dividend payouts through the 2000, 2008, and 2020 market crashes, they would have seen that the dividend payouts did not drop. Historical share prices could even have given them a rough estimate as to how long it would take for share prices to recover. With interest rates not yet going down, how much is your financial institution now charging you for the margin loan? If it is greater than 5%, then whatever you are making in your dividends is being lost. Buying stocks on margin is not much different than what speculators do with borrowed money chasing a big payoff. If they get the timing on their price guess just right, in hindsight, the interest on the loan can be seen as having been inconsequential. However, usually 95% of the time, speculators lose money. Why speculate if you do not need to when acquiring wealth and income? I've been through two market crashes. They're kind of a ho-hum experience now, as my dividend income is not impacted. The value of the portfolio drops. I still own the same number of shares. I'm still getting the same dividend income. And I know, because I've done my homework, that these share prices have grown by several multiples over the last 20 years, and the dividend payouts have grown at an even higher percentage. Be patient. Minimize your risk and your expenses, including investment expenses. Question number three. What are the consequences of losing your financial advisor? An 80-year-old widow who was a friend sought my help when she fired her financial advisor. I taught her over many months and hundreds of emails how to invest in financially strong companies with long histories of paying high, safe dividends. Did she suffer without having a financial advisor to guide her? No. She saved herself the $26,000 the investment advisor was siphoning from her million-dollar portfolio every year. She also managed to double her income from the $36,000 the advisor had generated for her to $72,000. Within 2 years, she had also managed to recover the $300,000 that the financial advisor had lost from her portfolio, while it was his to do with as he pleased. Rather than worrying every day whether the portfolio controlled by the financial advisor would soon leave her penniless, she tells me that she now often forgets to look at her portfolio. For weeks, she has assumed, even during the 2020 market crash, that her dividend income would come in like clockwork. The daily hysteria of the financial press that used to upset her has become just background noise that she pays little attention to. Her story and how she did it is recorded in a book called Income and Wealth from Self-Directed Investing that she pushed me to write. She wanted to educate all those in her retirement village on safe investing. Her ability to score stocks allowed her to build a strong, diversified dividend portfolio, which requires almost zero time on her part to manage. I had nothing to do with the stocks she chose, other than giving her the stock scoring software and the direction and how to find the best dividend stocks. She knows exactly what she is invested in and why she is invested in it. When her investment advisor controlled her life savings, she had blindly allowed him to do whatever he wished with her money. She now realizes that no one cares as much about your money as you do, and that the reverence she had for her financial advisor was naive. Question number 4. How can I protect myself from the next stock market crash and an economic collapse? I've gone through the 2008 and 2020 market crashes. They had zero impact on my income. For almost 20 years, I've lived off my dividend income. Yes, portfolios declined considerably in a stock market crash, but I sold none of the financially strong stocks who have paid me at ever-increasing dividend payouts for two decades. Stock market crashes are caused by speculators who fear if they do not unload their shares that they will experience a permanent, devastating loss in net worth. Often, they invest in high-flying popular stocks that they were sure were going to quickly make them rich. These are often emotional, impulsive buys prompted by investment professionals as the next Microsoft or Tesla. Before buying the stocks, these speculators did not consider such things as book values compared to share price, operating margins, histories of dividend payouts, trends of stock price before and after previous market crashes. They occur about every 5 years. Price to earning ratios, average share volume traded, and so on. Why are the high dividends of financially strong companies not impacted by stock market crashes? Because dividends are paid out of profits. Profits are a result of the wise revenue and expense decisions made by the executives of a company. While profits can influence speculators, they are not directly linked to share prices. Just because a share price decline does not mean their profits and dividends must also decline. if revenues decline to maintain a profit margin, executives will cut expenses. The purpose of every company is to make a profit. Share prices are a separate transaction that takes place in an auction vehicle called the stock exchange. This is where optimists are bidding against pessimists to acquire shares. For a stock transaction to take place, there must always be a buyer and a seller. Share prices don't just happen like spins on a roulette wheel. When you are buying a stock, you're buying the expertise of their management team. Buy quality stocks paying high dividends, and you will rarely have a need to consider selling the shares at the worst possible time during a stock market crash. Be patient. The share prices of quality stocks do recover and reach new record highs. All of this can be proved before you buy a stock by looking at easily obtainable historical records. Question number 5. Why do investors invest in startups that lose money? Investors who invest in money-losing startups do it because they want to get rich quickly. They see this new stock as their once-in-a-million chance to turn a $10,000 investment into $1 million. This is lottery ticket investing. They want to believe that the promotion that this new startup is the next Microsoft or Tesla. They don't care that its operating margin is now a minus figure. They're buying into the dream of promoted potential. What is more interesting is why they keep their money in a startup stock whose share price is shrinking daily. After analyzing thousands of stocks for my investment books, it is interesting to see so many initial placements at $30 shrink down to less than $3 within 10 years. Some may initially be paying dividends of 50 cents that shrink to 5 cents. When does the realization sink in that this stock is not the next Microsoft? You can become wealthy in the stock market without investing in startups. The shares of many financially strong established companies paying high dividends do steadily increase, as do their dividend payouts. They are easy to spot. Within 5 years, you can easily double your investment. Is 5 years too long to wait? Is doubling your investment not enough? Question number 6. How can investors ensure they are supporting ethical and responsible companies and their portfolios? Investors cannot ensure that they are supporting ethical and responsible companies. Their insight into a company's inner workings are usually limited to only seeing what the company's executives want them to see. On the threat of being terminated, employees are forbidden from talking to the media. Information on a public company is very tightly controlled for fear that anything that could be interpreted negatively by speculators does not impact the company's share price or its relation with its customers and its suppliers. Often, you do not learn of such immoral and unethical behavior until a former employee reveals hidden secrets. Studies of deviant behavior indicate that 80% of any group of people play by the rules. Within the other 20% are various shades of lighter and darker shades of gray. Some sales representatives and managers being judged and compensated for the results they achieve in meeting company targets will lie, cheat, and steal. With thousands of employees in a large major public company, it is unlikely that the chief executive and the directors are even aware of the deviant behavior, and if they are, they would not make it public. Furthermore, determining what is unethical and irresponsible is open to interpretation. Public companies are not religious charities. The motivation of a publicly traded company is to make a profit for its shareholders. There are many gray areas in the pursuit of profits. The public latch on to the obvious negative corporate behavior that they see. For example, predatory high pricing is often a target for those searching for unethical corporate behavior. However, if through circumstance, an item that costs the corporation $10 to acquire can be sold for $1,000, it will be sold for $1,000. Does this mean that the market is responsible for determining what is a fair and ethical and responsible price? If the market perceives the product's price to be unethical and irresponsible, the product will become unmarketable. This does not happen because the clever marketers will keep adjusting inflated prices until the market bites on the bait being offered. The $1,000 price might have to slip all the way down to $900. It is all a question of perception. It also requires considerable effort by those opposed to successfully boycott a product. What is their motivation of such market changers? It isn't profit. Some consumers tasked with cost-effective purchasing can almost always be persuaded to ignore the moral constraints for a competitive bargain. This is where advertising can be seen as a tool of the unethical and irresponsible in overcoming moral or health constraints. For example, tobacco, alcohol, obesity, pollution, child labor. In a free capitalist society, the morality of investor decisions to support or not support a company's perceived or unperceived business practices is complicated and vague. Question number 7. What are the benefits of learning how to invest from a stock market expert? Anyone who tells you they are a stock market expert is immediately under suspicion of being someone who is dedicated to transferring as much money as possible from your pocket to their pocket. What makes them an expert? The more of their titles and qualifications that they throw at you, the more suspicious you should be of their intentions. They are professionals at enriching themselves, not you. The proof of their expertise that I would want to see is the last 3 years of their monthly financial reports. These would show what they have invested in, what charges they incurred, and what were the gains and losses. Do not be too surprised if the amount of money you have to invest exceeds what this professional has invested for himself. I would want them to question them about why they chose their investments and why they sold or did not sell investments. I doubt any professional would ever provide you with such information. Think about it. If you could earn an income of several hundred thousand dollars from your stock portfolio, why would you be out there trying to flog investments to naive investors? Enjoying your job only goes so far. Selling is never easy. Trying to appease investors whose portfolios have not generated constant growth cannot be a pleasant way to spend your day. No one, including any expert, can accurately predict future share prices. If your expert starts to relate a complicated procedure of buying and selling stocks that is guaranteed to make you rich, or a mutual fund that you can put your money into and forget, be very suspicious. However, if the expert is concerned about the careful preservation of wealth and realizing a realistic income from your investments, listen carefully and investigate the proof that proves how their careful methods work. You may have discovered a real expert. However, this does not mean that you can now fall asleep and neglect your investment education and constant monitoring of the health of your portfolio. The safest, most cost-effective way to invest is as an informed, self-directed investor. It requires minimal time to create and manage a portfolio of financially strong stocks paying high dividends. It only requires patience and common sense. Thanks for listening. If you wish more information on investing and stock scoring, please visit my website, www.saferbetterdividendinvesting.com.